The weather and climate often cause concern and curiosity. But understanding the facts behind the phenomena can be a challenge. We're here to help. From the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign and Illinois Public Media, welcome to Weather Realness, a weekly podcast about the skies above Illinois and the world.
I'm your host, Eddie Wolf, graduate research assistant in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois. Anyone can call themselves a meteorologist, especially online. Each year, more and more people are getting their forecasts and their weather news online from YouTube, Instagram, and TikTok. And because of this, there's also been a growing number of digital meteorologists and others online providing weather information. But how do we know who to trust? Joining us today to answer that question is Joe Martucci. He is the president and director of meteorology at Cup of Joe Weather and Drone and is a digital meteorologist himself. He is also a member and past chair of the American Meteorological Society Board of Digital Meteorologists. Thanks for joining us, Joe.
You're very welcome. It's a pleasure to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so I think just to get started, could you maybe tell people a little bit about what a digital meteorologist actually is?
Yeah, so a digital meteorologist is someone who's conveying weather information in a public manner through digital channels. And that could be through web, that could be through audio, just like this, online in a podcast form, or through social media.
Yeah, and as we mentioned, you're a part of the American Meteorological Society's Board of Digital Meteorologists. So could you talk maybe a little bit about what the American Meteorological Society actually is and what role they play in our field?
Yeah, so the AMS, the American Meteorological Society, is our biggest professional society for people in the weather and climate space. We're actually the largest organization in the world when you look at who's in each country and how many people are in each. So the AMS, you know, plays a pivotal role in helping people advance their careers through excellent networking events, notably the annual conference in which thousands of people in this space, you know, descend upon a city for a week. But also, we also help shape both policy on the public level, but also within the weather world through different boards. And that's where the certified digital meteorology seal comes in, and also the Board of Digital Meteorologists. The seals that we do have, and the digital meteorology one is one of several, is a way to accredit those in the field who designate and have the ability to, in the case of digital meteorology, communicate weather threats effectively, but also be able to know what you're talking about in doing so on digital platforms.
Yeah, and like you mentioned there, a big part of your board is this Certified Digital Meteorologist Seal, or CDM. So can you talk a little bit about what led you guys to develop that?
Well, I actually had a pretty decent role in this. You know, there was a need, I would say, in the 2010s and going to about COVID time, where there were more meteorologists who were working in this digital space, or not in traditional television, but wanted to get certified. And up until the time of the CDM seal was created, which was 2023, when those seals were awarded, if you were someone like myself, or you were working in print media, or you were working, you know, in a blog sense, right, you couldn't be certified because there was really no way for you to fit the qualifications of the Certified Broadcast Meteorology Seal, which has been around for decades. And in fact, myself, I ran, you know, this is a personal opinion. This isn't an AMS opinion, but I think I ran into some of those challenges. I was working in newspaper, but working in digital and newspaper at the Press of Atlantic City, and I wanted to have this certification and seal. So I did apply, and it took a few tries to get the certification for the CBM seal. But the thing was, the graders and the board, they never really saw an example like myself, because while I was doing videos, you know, and I had a green screen, you know, we didn't have the resources that someone in broadcast did. And the other thing is too, when you're working in television, most of what you're doing is for live recording. And I was doing it in a recorded format, meaning, you know, we could edit, we could mess up if we wanted, you know, not that we would, but you know, we can mess up. We could, you know, edit it out the way we did. And we made these videos to last for a long period of time. Live broadcasts are usually made for the moment. This would be made for hours at a time. So just kind of getting back to all this, you know, it wasn't just me, but there were other people like me who wanted to be certified, but they didn't have a space for the CBM seal. So Erica Groce, who at the time was the Commissioner of Professional Affairs, which oversees the Broadcast Board and Digital Meteorology Board, amongst others, put together a working group to say, hey, we need to be able to certify people who are in this digital space. And I had a role in that. I was fortunate enough to be designated the person to come up with the grading rubric for the whole certification when people would apply. And we started giving out our first seals in 2023. And I was fortunate to be awarded and honored with the first CDM seal.
Yeah, that's really cool how this has sort of come about over the last couple of years. And I think, you know, especially with, like we mentioned, folks increasingly getting their information online, you know, having a seal in that space as well as in the broadcast space is really important for folks.
It is. And you know, it's not even that we even live in a digital world. We live in a social first world. You know, the way I tell people that either work for me or, you know, come in as an intern with me is think about creating content the way you would want to consume content. And most of the time, you're not thinking about television first. You might not even be thinking about a website first. You're probably thinking about, well, hey, what looks good on X or what looks good on YouTube or what looks good on Facebook, right? So that's the kind of world that we're in. You know, digital, you know, when it comes to new local news consumption, weather is still the most the reason why people go to news sources the most. But what we're seeing now is people are increasingly going to social first. And that's where I think the CDM meets the moment in this case.
Yeah, and we should also mention, of course, that the National Weather Association, which is another major body in our field, also offers certifications for both broadcast and digital meteorologists. But focusing on the CDM in particular, what are the qualifications that folks need to have in order to receive that? So if one of our listeners sees somebody who has a CDM, what can they sort of expect them to have in terms of qualifications?
Well, you can expect them to be a degree meteorologist, and that's the engine that drives all of our AMS, you know, certifications when it comes to either the broadcast seal, the certified consulting meteorologist seal, or the digital seal. You have to be degreed. You know, there are a lot of people in the internet space who, you know, they might be good weather communicators, and we're not knocking that, but they don't have the credentials. You know, a lot of times these, you know, and they're very good weather communicators, they can't get a job anywhere else except in the media space because it's the only one that doesn't strictly require you to have a degree. So you can't work for the National Weather Service. You can't work for NASA. You can't work even in the private sector in many instances. So it's not only that, but it's also the ability to communicate weather effectively, but do so in a manner that's scientifically accurate. So in other words, you know, if you are a meteorologist, if you have a degree in meteorology, you as the public can say, hey, you know, this person is qualified, that no doubt about it. But it's the people with the seals who say, okay, they took this to the next level. They are the creme de la creme of meteorologists that are working in the public space.
Yeah, I think that's a great sort of explanation of what this means, you know, for the folks out in the public who might see it. From your perspective, as somebody who now has one of these certifications, have you seen people sort of react to it in any way? Do folks sort of recognize that you have this extra certification and sort of view you differently from other weather communicators?
I think so, but I will say it takes effort on my part. You know, I always make sure it's apparent in most of the videos that I do and on our website that I am certified. I mean, you know, I'm proud to have it. I'm proud to be one of the few people that do have it. And I think when you get to talk to people, especially in a one-on-one setting, and say, hey, this is what I'm about, then they're like, oh, I never thought of, you know, that before. I never thought that there was someone who could be certified and you're a degreed meteorologist. And then they and then they see it. So I think a lot of times the most effective way at showing that you have the seal is in those one-on-one communications with people.
If you're just joining us, this is Weather Realness, the podcast about weather and climate from Illinois Public Media and the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. I'm Eddie Wolf, graduate research assistant in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois. We're talking about how digital meteorologists get certified as trusted experts with Joe Martucci, member and past chair of the American Meteorological Society Board of Digital Meteorologists. So we were talking about their, you know, the role that people might have in making a forecast. With all of these apps nowadays where the forecasts are essentially generated automatically, what role do digital meteorologists sort of play in this ecosystem? Is it more providing context to the forecast? What do you see that role as?
I tell we do like a summer camp with an intern and someone that works with me every Tuesday. And I've been saying the past couple of weeks, our job is to provide information that that weather app will not do. What can you tell people that the generic weather app cannot tell you? Because we have to face reality. And that is, nobody really cares if you say it's 74, the weather app says it's 78 and it was 74. People aren't going to care. They're not going to care if you say it's mostly sunny and it ends up being mostly cloudy. But what you can do is you can provide context about the weather. What can you say about the weather that isn't necessarily forecast related? It might be information about the record low temperature we set yesterday. It might be the six ways that this heat wave was significant. It might be, hey, here's real-time webcams or just sharing, you know, information from emergency managers about what's happening in the community that you serve. That's where I see the biggest role is providing context about the weather that not necessarily is that seven-day forecast, because unless it's a severe weather event, it's not going to matter that much. And I think we have to face that reality. And I definitely face that. You know, I try to embrace that reality by saying, okay, like, yeah, I'm going to give up that five-day, you know, making sure I really nail all 5 days to be better than the weather app. Of course, I'm going to forecast, but I'd rather spend more of my energy talking about drought in the area or talking about, you know, how many high tides we've seen with flooding this year. That's where I see our most valuable input. We are still valuable. We're just valuable in different ways than we may have been 20 years ago.
So in this digital age, of course, anyone can post weather information online. And this can, of course, lead to the spread of misinformation potentially. What do you see as some of the consequences of that?
Oh boy, that's a loaded question. I mean, there's a lot of things with that. And I'll say too, you know, we've seen this even sometimes within the AMS. It's so tempting to chase clicks and page views and likes and comments. I mean, I think that's human nature. But what I would say is, you know, the biggest thing is the cry wolf syndrome, right? If everything's a big deal, then nothing becomes a big deal. And what I always like to do myself is save those, hey, this is a big deal kind of days for the days where it is a big deal. You know, if there's a few rain showers around, I'm not going to say, hey, you know, red alert. You know, sometimes if there's just some regular thunderstorms around, I'm not doing that either. 2 inches of snow is not a red alert day. But I think ultimately what I try to do is stay in my lane. And anybody who works with me, you know, let's stay in our lane. We can only control what we can control. Now, on the AMS level, we've had a lot of conversation about how do we keep track of what people are saying online within our community. And that's hard because we have a lot of people in our community and, you know, the boards are all volunteers. So it's not like, you know, no one's getting paid to go on a station's website or onto Twitter and seeing what's being posted, you know. So the misinformation, you know, I think mainly I think the cry wolf syndrome is probably top, but at the same time, you know, it's also people might lower their expectations for you as a meteorologist because sometimes people just post maps that look cool and they have all the bright colors and the scary letters and things like that. But what does it actually mean? And then that public, you know, person in the public might say, I don't know, it just kind of looks good. Meteorologists don't really do much more than just post cool looking or scary looking maps. And that's not true. We're here to provide relevant, life-saving, and yes, we have to provide engaging information because that's how people would consume it. But we always have to keep in mind that we are trained meteorologists and we're here to help.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, at the end of the day, it's this balance that meteorologists have to strike of both conveying the severity of situations when they are severe, but also, like you said, not creating that sort of cry wolf scenario where folks think that if everything is severe, nothing is severe, basically. So you mentioned seeing things like hyperbole coming up a lot, but what are some other types of weather misinformation that you've seen online over the past couple of years?
I think from, you know, even people who are trying to position themselves as someone who posts about weather is posting these computer model maps 14, 15 days out that's saying, here comes the big snow 2 weeks from today. And, you know, it's not so much that it's misinformation because it's a model and that's what the model believe, you know, given the information, believes is going to happen. But it's not considerate of the context. You know, that gives us a bad rep because most days it's not going to snow 33 inches. And if the model shows it 10 times in a winter and you post it 10 times and it happens zero times, then people just think, okay, these weather people aren't right. And I think people sometimes blur the line between a computer model and a meteorologist, just like they blur the line between a generic weather app and a meteorologist. Most meteorologists don't run their own weather app. Even people who work for employers who have weather apps, they don't necessarily work for those weather apps. The weather apps that you see, most of them, not all of them, but most of your freely available ones have very little, if any, context from meteorologists, right? It's a marketing tool. Your Apple weather app does not have any meteorologists working for Apple. And the way I always like to tell people, the way I always like to explain it is this. You know, if your Apple weather app lied to you 12 times in a row, would you still buy an iPhone the next time you needed a phone? And people say, well, yeah. And I said, well, why is that? And then they say, because they don't really care about the weather app. I'm like, exactly. That's the point, right? Whereas if I was wrong 12 times in a row and you were paying me for weather forecasts or you were a sponsor of mine or you're just following me online, you'd stop following me or you stop paying me or you stop being my client. And that's the difference.
If you're just joining us, this is Weather Realness, the podcast about weather and climate from Illinois Public Media and the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. I'm Eddie Wolf, graduate research assistant in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois. So one thing we mentioned earlier was that, of course, there's a lot of popular weather communicators out there who don't actually have formal degrees in meteorology, but have still, you know, garnered such a large following, and in a lot of cases have helped communicate some really dangerous weather during some pretty severe events. So how do we, you know, as a field kind of balance this, you know, the importance of a degree with all these folks who still play a really important role in our field?
That's the million-dollar question. And it's really been a question we've asked ourselves for decades. If you look back in the early form of television in the 50s, 60s, and 70s, most of the people who were communicating weather to the public were not the green meteorologists. And that's part of why the AMS had its seal, right, to the television seal, for people to, you know, understand that these people are degreed meteorologists. Now it's a different version of it, right, in digital. And I would say the issue is more pronounced because there's not that barrier to entry anymore. You don't have to get a job in television or radio to communicate to the public. You can just have a Facebook page, right? So giving that context, you know, this is a heated argument within the American Meteorological Society. I've been, you know, the person who's brought up these kind of conversations. So me, from a personal standpoint, you know, I have become more open to, listen, you can't put the toothpaste back in the tube. We do have people who are in the weather space. They do communicate effectively and, most importantly, responsibly. And I think they need to have a role in this community. I think from an, you know, what I've proposed from an AMS perspective is that we do offer some kind of, you know, certification, and maybe not certified is the right word, but some kind of approval that, you know, one, that communicator can feel like they have a good, you know, they have a role within the AMS, and at the same time can maybe help shape some policy. I think there's room in the professional society for these people. I am not, but that my opinion is not representative of everybody who's even on our CDM board. And that's okay. You know, that's why we have these conversations. But I think if there's something, I'm of the opinion, especially in this environment that we're in, where, you know, it is more of an anti-expert environment, that maybe we do, you know, let's bring in these people who are doing it the right way. It doesn't matter if they have a degree or not. But let's give them, let's show them what we are about as meteorologists, and let's try to be a positive influence to those weather communicators and also learn from them as well. I still think we need a clear distinction between a meteorologist and a weather communicator. But the reality of the situation is, and this is, you know, even in a broader context, the general public does, unless you are blatant about it, the general public will not differentiate who a meteorologist and not a meteorologist is, because most people, and myself included, we're not going to do the homework on every single person. You know, we just see someone posting weather information. If they do it enough, you're saying, oh, he or she's a meteorologist, and that may or may not be the case.
Yeah, and of course, sort of on that topic, we've been talking about these certifications as one way to sort of show who has the expertise to sort of deliver weather information. But, you know, for our listeners out there, who are looking online and seeing all these different sources of weather info, how can they identify someone who is a reliable source?
Well, the number one thing to do is, the easiest thing to do is check their social media profiles. Do they have a seal? Do you see the CDM seal, or there's a gold AMS seal, or there's an NWA seal, literally says NWA for the National Weather Association. You can go to their website, you know, whether it's a TV or radio station website or their own website, and just look at their about page. I mean, I tell people that when I do talks, I say, just do a little research on them, right? That's probably the easiest way to do that. You can also, if you want, the American Meteorological Society does keep a list, and it's publicly viewable, of who have seals. And the NWA, I know, does the same thing, National Weather Association.
For our listeners, you know, just sort of reiterate this, what are some consistently reliable sources that they can go to for weather information?
So the National Weather Service is the most reliable source in the sense that it's all meteorologist driven, and they also issue the official watches, warnings, and advisories for your area. So weather.gov is the website for that. You can also download the Everything Weather app, which is not officially from the Weather Service, but is also a part of, you know, draws from that data. Hurricanes.gov is for the National Hurricane Center. The Storm Prediction Center, which does a lot with tornadoes and severe weather, is sbc.noaa.gov. So those are a lot of the official sources. And then again, do a little research and see who is a degreed meteorologist, who has the certifications, and follow that person.
Absolutely. And of course, if we have any listeners on the East Coast, they can tune to Joe Martucci and get their forecast from you as well.
That, I appreciate that. Yeah, I did not pay you to say that, just for the record, for everybody listening.
Well, thank you so much for joining us, Joe. This has been a really great conversation today.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure being on.
We've been talking with Joe Martucci, President and Director of Meteorology at Cup of Joe Weather and Drone. He is also a member and past chair of the American Meteorological Society Board of Digital Meteorologists. I'm Eddie Wolf, Graduate Research Assistant in the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences at the University of Illinois. Thanks for joining us on Weather Realness. Do you have a weather or climate question you want us to answer? Leave us a voicemail at 217-333-2141 or email weatherrealness@illinois.edu.
Weather Realness is produced by Trent Ford, Jeff Frame, Deanna Hentz, Stephen Nesbitt, Stephanie Orellana, Eddie Wolf, and me, Joseph Trujillo Falcon. Production is partially funded by the Backlund Charitable Trust. This podcast is a partnership between the Department of Climate, Meteorology, and Atmospheric Sciences and Illinois Public Media, a service of the University of Illinois Urbana-Champaign. Thank you for listening.